Doctor's Kitchen. Recipes, health, lifestyle. Welcome to the Doctor's Kitchen podcast. The show about food, lifestyle, medicine, and how to improve your health today. I'm Dr. Rupi, your host. I'm a medical doctor, I study nutrition, and I'm a firm believer in the power of food and lifestyle as medicine. Join me and my expert guests where we discuss the multiple determinants of what allows you to lead your best life. Honey has been used for millennia as a medicine, and even to this day, people swear by it for treating viral illnesses, espousing the antibacterial and immune-enhancing effects. But is there any evidence to support this? And if honey is largely made up of just sugar molecules, how can it have these miraculous effects? Well, today's episode is a deep dive into what honey actually is, the chemical makeup of honey, and a look at some of the studies that have examined gut health, immunity, and metabolic health benefits. I'll reveal whether I think it's worth taking a spoon of honey every day. On another episode for YouTube specifically, I'm going to discuss how to choose the best honey, how to spot fake honey on the supermarket shelves. Yes, that is a thing, as well as a taste test for different honeys that are available in supermarkets and online. And they do get quite pricey. So it's best that I do this on your behalf rather than you spending hundreds of pounds on honey that you can buy online and in your local health food stores. Remember, you can watch this podcast on YouTube, and the easiest low-cost way for you to support the podcast is to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, and hit the notification bell and subscribe on YouTube as well if you are there. For now, on to the podcast, all about whether you should be eating honey every day. Before we get started, here is a quick word from the people who make this podcast possible.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Honey is apparently antibacterial, improves wound healing, prevents viral illnesses, treats coughs, and is good for gut health. But if honey is basically sugar, and sugar is just sugar, how on earth is this substance healthy? We're going to dive into it, but I want to go into some of the origins and traditional uses of honey just to give you some context of how long this has been used for by a number of different civilizations across the world. So it's been used for thousands of years, and evidence for its consumption has been found dating back to the Neolithic age. It's been used in ancient times, including Egyptians, Romans, Mayans, Chinese, and people use it as one of the only sweeteners that was available back in the time. So they used it as part of religious rituals and for medicinal purposes, like healing wounds and burns and against lung diseases. So there is this long historical context of using honey as a medicine. There's even some scriptures that show digestive effects as well, so treating diarrhea and constipation, potentially because of antimicrobial effects. You'll see it mentioned as a medicine in various texts. So in Egyptian papyri dating, 2000 BC, in Hindu scripture, in Hippocrates, loads of people have been raving about honey. It's not just your favorite health influencers online. Let's dive into the actual product of honey. So it's produced from the nectar of flowering plants. Plants basically produce this nectar to entice bees, and so they spread their pollen to other areas so they get to grow. Bees suck up the nectar in the honey sacs, where the bees' enzymes, including one called invertase, break down the complex sugars, sucrose, into much simpler sugars, glucose and fructose. I've put a little diagram of what exactly that looks like, so you can see clearly that the glucose and fructose structure is a lot simpler than sucrose. It's basically just broken up by damaging that glycosidic bond in the middle there. Honeybees make honey basically to store up as food for the larvae and other members of their colony to survive during the winter months. So for them, it's a really important food. It is the food and it is medicine for them. So we've established that honey is basically just sugar, just by looking at the chemical composition right there. It's in the form of glucose and fructose. And if you've heard anyone talk about glucose and fructose online, you will know that those are the devil. It's not basically what I think, but essentially the excess consumption of glucose and fructose is net bad for us. So why on earth are there any health benefits? And is there any robust scientific evidence backing up these anecdotal claims that I'm sure you've heard of? So let's look at the actual constituents by looking at this other diagram that looks at the minerals and enzymes and the other polyphenols that you find. So honey is 80% sugar. So what I just described there, sucrose, fructose, and glucose, that's 80% of what honey is. 17%, so the vast minority, just water. But then there's a really interesting 3%, and that's a treasure trove of vitamins, minerals, polyphenols. And these constituents are why researchers are investigating these potential health-promoting effects. It's basically down to this 3% of honey. And depending on the type and the quality of honey that you'll find, you'll get different amounts of these constituents. So minerals and vitamins, that's around 0.2 to 0.5% of honey in its dry weight. And the specific ones are potassium, sodium, vitamin C, and B vitamins. So the B vitamins like thiamine, riboflavin, niacin. I just want to point out here, you should not be consuming honey to get those ingredients specifically, those micronutrients, because you'll find potassium, vitamin C in things like dark green leafy vegetables, pulses. You'll find lots of different B vitamins in whole grains. You'll also find them in small amounts in nuts and seeds. So don't think about honey as sources of those minerals and vitamins. It's just interesting that that 3% contains a tiny fraction that has those micronutrients. It also contains enzymes. So I mentioned invertase before. It also has glucose oxidase and diastase, and these come from the nectar, the bees, or the microorganisms in honey as well. We don't actually know what the effects of those enzymes are, but a few methods to develop a quality ranking for honey look specifically to measure some of these enzymes like diastase. And that is meant to be a quality indicator of honey, but we don't actually know what those enzymes do. So it's kind of hard to determine quality if you're looking at an enzyme that we don't particularly understand what it does, but that's a quality ranking system that you might see online. And we're going to talk a bit about where there is this huge confusion. There's a bit of a murky world with determining the quality of honey later on in this episode as well. So the general sort of thinking by some of these quality measures is where the quality is high, you also find high amounts of enzymes like diastase, for example. Another fraction of this tiny, tiny 3% are phenolic acids or polyphenols. So you'll find things like pea turmeric, gallic acid, caffeic, and ferulic acid, and other flavonoids as well. So let's zoom into this pie chart that I was just talking about. This is basically honey composition. And you'll see here that it is largely sugars. You've got sucrose, you've got dextrose here. You've got a big fraction, which is water. This is basically what is in honey. And if you look at the next, if you're listening to this on the podcast, I'm just describing a pie chart that basically says exactly what I just stated. 80% different types of sugars and 17% water and a very, very small fraction. The next table that I'm describing for the audio guys, but also for you guys on YouTube, are the phenolic acids. So this is basically the different types of phenolic acids that you find in honey and flavonoids as well. And you might recognize some of these. So caffeic acid, chlorogenic acid, you'll find these in coffee and tea in varying amounts. And on the flavonoid side, you've got quercetin, conferol, apigenin. You find that in things like parsley and apple and onions. They're really, really common flavonoids that have been well recognized as having some beneficial effects. But considering that there's such a small amount of all these different elements in honey, it begs the question, can honey be an important source of nutrients? Can we actually consider the honey to be an important source of all those different nutrients, the micronutrients, the polyphenols, etc.? My personal opinion is no, and that's for three reasons. The first being the most obvious, low amounts. It's really, really hard to get a significant amount of those particular compounds without consuming a bucket load of honey. So to have sufficient quantities to have noticeable health effects, my sort of skepticism, like a detector, is going off the scale here. Like I can't get my head around those small amounts having a demonstrable impact. The second reason is bioavailability. We're not actually quite sure how well our bodies can actually utilize these compounds in honey. In other words, like the bioavailability remains unclear and can be influenced by lots of different factors. Things like environmental variables, how you process the honey, interactions with other substances like proteins or polyphenols, the chemical structures of those phenolic compounds, and how our intestinal digestion via one's microbes can impact the ultimate level of those different polyphenols and whether they have a demonstrable health effect. And there's very limited research investigating the metabolism and absorption of honey polyphenols in humans. So it's still really up in the air. And the third thing is that not all honey types are the same. So depending on where the bees gather their nectar from, the honey can vary a lot. Different plants can give different types of honey, which can ultimately impact the nutrient quantity and quality. And this is sort of where, like, the line for me kind of around like determining quality honey is really blurred. Like there's a lot of stuff online that you'll hear about, but there isn't much evidence to sort of underpin those particular benefits. But I want to be really frank. Despite my initial skepticism, the main therapeutic benefits and health promoting properties of honey, which we're going to get into in a moment, are actually attributed to the presence of these small amounts of polyphenols. So despite me looking at it on face value and thinking this is not going to have any effect whatsoever, there are researchers, bona fide researchers, who think that those small amounts, those small properties of honey, are responsible for some of the health effects that we see in certain studies. Let's talk about those potential health benefits of honey. Again, research is really limited and it's really mixed, but there is some interesting evidence suggesting that honey intake can improve certain aspects of health. Number one, cardiometabolic health. So researchers at the University of Toronto recently found that honey intake improved key markers of metabolic health, including blood sugar, cholesterol levels, particularly if, and this is going to be going to sound like music to a lot of people's ears here, particularly if the honey is in its raw form and from a single floral source. So there's raw honey, single floral source, so just one type of tree like Manuka. So Manuka honey is something that a lot of people have heard about. The team conducted a meta-analysis of 18 clinical trials totaling over 1,000 participants, and overall honey intake beneficially reduced people's fasting blood sugar, which I don't understand how that happens, but it reduced fasting blood glucose, blood sugar levels. It reduced total and LDL cholesterol. It reduced triglycerides and also a marker of fatty liver disease, something called ALT. It's a liver enzyme that we look for. We do liver enzyme tests, particularly if someone's on a hepatotoxic medication, for example. One of the things can be elevated ALT in fatty liver disease. It also increased HDL cholesterol, which is a marker of good cardiovascular health as well as some markers of inflammation. So that for me is a bit astounding if you just read the abstract, but we don't just read the abstract. We go into a little bit more detail. The dose, the median daily dose of honey in these trials was 40 grams, which is about 2 tablespoons of honey, which is a lot, which is more than the recommended allowance that the WHO recommends for added sugar in a 24-hour period. So that's a lot of sugar. And the participants were also shown to follow a healthy dietary pattern, with added sugars accounting for less than 10% of their total calorie intake. So that 40 grams was within that 10% or less of daily caloric intake. So that for me is pretty astounding. And that was in a paper that was published in 2023, so relatively recently. On the face of it, I'm still a bit skeptical, but you know, that disproves some of my skepticism, despite the face value of what honey is. The second thing is cough and upper respiratory tract infections. Everyone's had that experience of having lemon and honey mixed with hot water, maybe a clove mixed in there for a bit of flavor and some of those extra antibacterial benefits when you're ill, you're under the weather. So there was a study looking at this. It was a systematic review without a meta-analysis of randomized controlled trials. And researchers concluded that honey may be more effective than cough medication or no treatment in relieving symptoms in children with acute cough. And these results are actually in line with a Cochrane review. So Cochrane is a big organization. They're very well regarded to have the most up-to-date and the most rigorous reviews. They showed that giving honey to children for up to 3 days was more effective in relieving cough symptoms compared to placebo or salbutamol. Salbutamol is a spray that we give asthmatics, but also you can give it to children who have viral-induced wheeze, so wheeziness because of some receptors that overactivated and can cause constriction of your airways. But, big but here, the evidence was graded as low quality by the reviewers at Cochrane because of methodological flaws like small sample size. A lot of these were unblinded. I mean, it's quite hard to blind honey unless you're using like a sugar syrup and something that resembles honey. And they also looked at things like parent-reported outcome measurements rather than objective outcomes. So an objective outcome in the form of, let's say, a cough or a viral-induced wheeze might be a little at-home test that we use to demonstrate just how constructed your airways are by blowing into a flow machine that basically measures the amount of air that you can express in a single breath. So they just looked at, you know, they just basically asked the parents, do you think your kid is doing better or worse? And they just said, oh yeah, it's a bit better or you know, pretty much most of the same. So bottom line is we need more high quality, large randomized controlled trials to generalize these findings. But there are some positive results with honey. And the The attributes of that may be its antimicrobial effects. We'll get into some of the potential explanations a little bit later. The third thing is brain health. So another emerging area of honey research is looking at brain health and healthy aging. But most studies are looking at animals. There is one small human study conducted in 2020 on 80 people diagnosed with schizophrenia, and they found that Tualang honey supplementation improved total learning performance across domains in immediate memory. Now, I had to look up Tualang honey. I've never come across this before, but I looked on Amazon, and if you look at this on YouTube, Tualang black honey, 280 grams, and I'll just describe what I'm seeing for the folks listening to this. It is a very dark, licorice looking honey, and it is 66 pounds, down from 70, but still 66 pounds. That's almost $100 for a small tub of honey. So, I mean, that's an impressive price tag, and I'm sure it's a very good quality honey, but for not as robust studies, I don't know whether I'd be investing in that. And Tualang is a particular area in Southeast Asia, or that's where you find this particular honey from a Tualang plant, I imagine. They've also got some various quality indicators there, but as we'll get to, the quality indicators I don't think are that robust either. It's all very murky, finger in the air kind of stuff. That's the evidence as it stands today, the effect on cardiometabolic health, the reduction in cholesterol and blood sugar, which I can't really get my head around, the potential health benefits on brain health as well. But why, this begs the question, why might honey be better or at least different to table sugar? Well, there's a few potential reasons for why honey may be healthier. Now, before this, I just thought, you know, sugar is sugar, whether it's honey or agave, whatever, sugar is sugar. And sugar is a refined product. It's obtained from different natural sources. It can come from beets or cane. It follows a standard technological process leading to an almost pure substance, which is sucrose. And that's composed of both glucose and fructose molecules bound together. So sugar is 100% sucrose. So if you remember that diagram that I described earlier, you've got these two big sugar molecules stuck together via a glycosidic bond. That is sucrose, and that is what you find in sugar. In honey, the fructose and glucose molecules are independent, so they're separated. And there's slightly more fructose than glucose, which is why honey tastes a bit sweeter than sugar. And that's another reason why I tend to tell people to swap honey rather than sugar if they're using it, you know, in teas and stuff like that, because you don't need as much of the same amount of sugar to have the sweetness effect. But there also might be some added health benefits now after doing this research. The more complex composition of honey has led some researchers to suggest that it can have a different effect on blood glucose. And this is what I'm very interested in because of that research that we looked at earlier. So these researchers highlight that honey contains rare sugars, making up to about 14% of the total sugar content. And these rare sugars have slightly different chemical structures. And there are some studies that suggest that they can provide short and long-term benefits for glycemic control by inhibiting certain enzymes like sucrase or upregulating glucose transporters. And this may explain some of those benefits to glucose control that some people have experienced and was referenced in that study that we talked about earlier. So, I mean, it's a bit of a stretch even for the way I'm thinking about this. Like, there is some rare sugar and it's not totally fructose and glucose. That's a bit confusing for me. But one of these rare sugars that we looked at is called isomaltulase. That's isomaltulase. It's also suggested not to just be a sugar, but also to act as a prebiotic. So if you remember back to previous episodes, prebiotics are specialized types of fibers that are uniquely beneficial to microbes that live all around our body, largely concentrated in the large intestine. And these prebiotics can favorably improve the population of these microbes. They can have glucose lowering or glucose stabilizing effects. It can also reduce inflammation. It can also nourish the colonocytes. So if this particular sugar, even if it's a small amount, has a prebiotic effect, maybe that is the far stretch that explains why it has a glucose neutral or less of a glucose spiking effect. So the promotion of those bacteria associated with a healthy gut microbiome might be explained in honey by these rare sugars. Another explanation that we have talked about in a previous podcast, I believe, is this something called the catalytic effect, whereby fructose present in honey can increase the rate limiting step of something called glucokinase. So glucokinase is a particular type of enzyme, and it causes a subsequent increase in hepatic glucose metabolism. So it gets your liver working harder to take the glucose and then store it away, which means that you're still having sugar in your liver, but you're less likely to see blood sugar levels rise in your bloodstream. Does that necessarily mean that it's going to have a beneficial impact on your likelihood of metabolic disease in the long run? Unknown, but that's certainly one way in which we see, particularly with the likes of agave, which is very high in fructose, why that has a glucose blunting effect, or you don't see a blood sugar rise with agave, yet it's still a sugar, in my opinion. So we still shouldn't be having, you know, 2 tablespoons of the stuff every single day. That's my opinion anyway. Those are some of the reasons why sugar is different to honey, and why honey in the top trumps of different sweeteners might be slightly better than sugar over here. But, and here's a big but, before you start loading up your online shopping baskets full of honey, there's a big caveat. Okay, so we've seen very little human evidence supporting this, all those different benefits. In 2015, there were researchers at the US Department of Agriculture that compared the consumption of honey and sucrose and high fructose corn syrup, and they found no difference in metabolic effects such as glycemic response, lipid metabolism, and inflammation, suggesting that honey was not more beneficial than other sweeteners for glucose homeostasis. So glucose homeostasis, big funky word for glucose stabilizing effect. So the balance of glucose in the blood. A caveat to that, though, I would say, and that was published in the Journal of Nutrition in 2015, a caveat to that is honey is not all honey. What do I mean by that? There are many different types of honeys out there, including fake honey. And actually, we're going to do another episode, probably just for YouTube, where I'm going to try different types of raw honey. I might even convince myself to buy that Tualang honey just to try it for your sake, so you don't need to invest in it yourself. I might save a lot of people money. And depending on the quality of the honey, you may see different effects. So if you remember back to that study that we just talked about earlier, they looked at single floral honey that was raw in its form. That study that I just mentioned that didn't show a difference in glycemic response, lipid metabolism, inflammation, I very much doubt that they looked at specifically raw honey. So it's just a big caveat to my own caveat. Should you be having honey every single day? I personally think there'll be a lot of drawbacks that could negate any potential benefits of honey. Honey is a complex substance. It's not a uniform product. Its composition and thus the potential benefits vary massively depending on factors like floral source. So the type of plants that are that the bees feed on to produce the honey itself. Different flowers have different phytochemical properties, which therefore influences the presence and concentration of these different bioactive compounds, the honey polyphenols, the flavonoids. And so depending on what flowers the bees have visited, the honey can turn out very different. So I accept that there is going to be a huge amount of variation depending on the quality of the honey. And then that also goes into the geographical region. So it's not just the different types of flowers that the bees are feeding on, but in different regions around the world that have different climates and soils, that will also influence the flowers available for the bees, and then also variations in the honey composition. So everyone's heard of Manuka honey. And if you've been to your local supermarket, you'll notice that it's under lock and key now, because a little jar is as expensive as some whiskies. And, you know, to be fair to the manufacturers, the bottlers of Manuka, it is a very rare type of honey, and it does command a higher price tag for that reason. There is clear evidence for antibacterial properties attributed to the presence of methyl glyoxal. It's a compound that's derived from the nectar of the Manuka tree. And that has been shown to have some benefits as well, to the point that we actually use honey in medicinal environments as well. So after you've had an injury or laceration, or using plastics as well to improve wound healing and to reduce the likelihood of subsequent infection as a result of bacteria that live normally on the surface of our skin, we sometimes apply a concentrated high antibacterial honey via a little tube. And it's very expensive, but that is something that we use in medicine. So I do not doubt that it has antibacterial effects when applied topically. Whether or not that translates to cardiovascular health benefits, anti-inflammatory benefits, and cough, cold, and flu benefits, it's quite hard to say. But, you know, it might be worth a try. But if you are going to invest in it, try and go for a higher quality one. And we're going to do an episode describing how you can choose a quality one as well. The processing and storage method will also have an impact on the end product as well. So techniques like filtration, pasteurization, exposure to heat, this is all going to affect the levels of enzymes as well as vitamins and other heat-sensitive components in honey that may have an impact on the end quality of the product as well. So that processing and storage method is something to be wary of. And like I said, we're going to do an episode where I'm going to compare a whole bunch of different ones, and we're going to be looking for the processing and storage methods as one of the markers of quality ourselves. Because of this huge amount of variability in the composition of honey, there aren't any uniform standards. This is to say, we don't know which type of honey and how much could be beneficial. Aside from the pharmaceutical grade honey that we use in medicine, I haven't come across a real good standard of grading that can give the consumer confidence that you are getting a really high quality product that is, you know, reflective of a price tag. Like, you know, £60-70 for a jar. There are some regional methods and regional specific standards. So you've probably come across the UMF, or the Unique Manuka Factor. I almost said that wrong. Unique Manuka Factor Rating. But there is no comprehensive standardization across all honey types. And the studies, like you've heard, use different types of honey. They use different dosages. The outcomes measured are very different. So it's very hard to consistently compare and evaluate the beneficial effects of different honeys to draw conclusions from as well. So overall, the evidence is limited. It's of low quality. A lot of them are unblinded. A lot of them are short term. And for me, that just makes it hard to tell people, like, you should definitely invest in this because it's going to have these miraculous effects. There's going to be a lot more bang that you can get for your buck using different types of products. And if it's a nice to have, and if you want something to sweeten your tea that may have antibacterial effects, maybe then. But I think until then, we need better quality research. And it's really, really hard to draw conclusions about the effects of honey on health until I've seen anything of that sort of quality, that sort of benefit. So to summarize, is honey healthy? I think it really depends on what you're comparing it to, first off. So honey has small amounts of vitamins, minerals, plant compounds that could be beneficial. So if you are going to swap table sugar for honey, as long as it's in the correct amount, I don't mind. I think that's something that I do. Second of all, I do want you to remember that honey is still sugar. We shouldn't be thinking about honey as a health food, because it's mostly composed of sugar. To get meaningful benefit from the compounds in honey, you need a large amount of the honey that comes packaged with the sugar. So I would say, as a rule, most of us need to be reducing our sugar intake, which you can also get from, you know, fruits and berries and that kind of stuff. You want some natural sugars that combine with the fibers to mitigate the effect of those natural sugars. And if you want to sweeten foods, there are other ways in which you can use that, like cinnamon and spices, nutmeg. These are sweet spices. I don't think we should be having like huge amounts of honey. I think we should be using honey in the same way we use sugar, which is in small, very intentional doses. Number three, what dose do I actually use? So I would say I use a teaspoon at a time. I would always combine it with something that's protein and fiber rich. So if I'm thinking of a dessert, which would be baked oats with hemp seeds and frozen berries, I'd bake the frozen berries in the bottom. There's actually an app recipe. So if you go to the Doctor's Kitchen app, you'll be able to find this recipe. You bake the berries until they reduce a bit, add a little bit of honey, and then you top it with oats and nuts. I forget the total recipe now. And then a little bit more honey on top of that. That way you're using it responsibly. You're not using like a ton of sugar, and you still get that sweetness effect as well. You are baking it, so there is an argument to say that you're attenuating or removing the benefits of honey, as particularly in raw honey, because it's got the enzymes and vitamin C that might be having the health benefits. But, you know, that's one way in which you can use it. The other way in which I would use it is with ginger tea, half or a teaspoon of honey, raw honey, mixed in with that hot water. That is something that I have when I'm feeling a bit under the weather or my voice has gone from podcasting too much. But those are the ways in which I would use it. But the number one takeaway from this is there are so many other foods that we get significant amounts of polyphenols from, whole fruits, vegetables, legumes, nuts, and seeds. I would not put honey in the same category as that. It is an add-on. It might be something that you want to supplement with. It might be something you want to experiment with, particularly if you like your tea slightly sweeter. But I would use it in the context of like creating a clove, rich anti-inflammatory drink with a bit of sweetener with raw honey. I wouldn't put it into the class of foods that I want to consume on a daily basis. I think you should be focusing on dark leafy vegetables, greens, nuts and seeds, berries. That's the mainstay. And then obviously plant-based proteins and animal-based proteins. Honey is a nice add-on, but it's not something that I would say is a health food that everyone should be having every single day. Until I see a lot of evidence to suggest otherwise, that's going to be my position. I think it's a wonderful ingredient. You should still use it, but in moderation. And it's still, in my mind, classed as a sugar. If you think differently, let me know. I want to know in the comments on YouTube. This is where we're going to be diving a lot more into to find out our responses to these episodes. There isn't a way on Apple Podcasts or Spotify to really get real-time feedback about the quality of specific episodes. So if you're listening to this, then do jump onto YouTube, subscribe whilst you're there. It helps us out. It's completely free to you. Hit the notification bell and let us know in the comments what you think of this, because I'd love to do another episode on different types of sweeteners. If you think there are health benefits attributed to those, it could be maple syrup. It could be coconut sugar. I'd love to do a little episode on that. But we're also going to do a taste test and help you choose a high quality raw honey if you want to invest in that too. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Doctor's Kitchen podcast. Remember, you can support the pod by rating on Apple, follow along by hitting the subscribe button on Spotify, and you can catch all of our podcasts on YouTube if you enjoy seeing our smiley faces. Review show notes on the doctorskitchen.com website and sign up to our free weekly newsletters where we do deep dives into ingredients, the latest nutrition news, and of course, lots of recipes by subscribing to the Eat, Listen, Read newsletter by going to thedoctorskitchen.com/newsletter. And if you're looking to take your health further, why not download the Doctor's Kitchen app for free from the App Store? I will see you here next time.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.